a special Pause for the Cause episode with Paul Lawson from Mid-City Electric Technologies.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, Rob, we're here. A pause for the cause, but there's two of us this time because, well, as we were discussing pre-show, we've been through the ringer together. We know why these episodes are important. So thanks for hopping in and joining me today, buddy.
Jeff, it's always good to talk to you, man, especially something I'm very passionate about and trying to help spread some good knowledge and meet awesome humans like Paul. And, you know, we're going to talk about some purple elephants today that may make people uncomfortable, but it's why we're talking about them. You know, we can't keep sweeping a lot of things under the rug like we have.
Yep.
Yeah. And as you know, in true spirit, I got to give them a call out. You know, this is brought to you or connected to you by Cal Beyer, the one and only Cal Beyer. Thank you for being a connector of connectors. He connected Paul and I together and Rob and Paul together because we're always looking for those people to spread our arms out and carry the load. So, Paul, yeah. Welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, good to be here. Thank you guys so much for having me. You know, this is it's so funny because, you know, Jeff, I reached out to you just to kind of ask some questions just about content creation. You guys are awesome at that. And then we just started telling stories, you know, it just kind of happened. So I love it. I think it's great. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. I'm really excited to dig into what you've been doing because it's an evolution in the industry, right? Like Rob, we were all talking about this pre-call. Like we remember the grind back in the day and we remember not even, you know, being able to talk about some of the things that you just kind of, you could look around the room and see, you know, just the people on the show circuit or, you know, you'd go into it, you know, we'd take the roadshow into a town and you'd see some of the folks that were showing up there and they're trying to learn about technology, but they're also, you know, they got their laptops out and their phones out and they're running out and they're sweating when they come back in. And it's like, you know, but we've come all this way now. We can talk about it. So it's going to be kind of awesome. So
love it.
Just a quick intro. Paul Lawson, right? Risk management coordinator and lead mental health advocate for Mid-City Electric Technologies. So that sure is a mouthful.
It sure is. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's probably a pretty large workload, isn't it?
You know, it's kind of one of those things where I got into risk management a couple years ago to try to like say what of the black and white things in construction can kind of hug or fit alongside the well-being stuff that we were doing, all the while knowing mental health advocacy is really what we were trying to do. Like we were trying to develop this bridge between the resources and the therapists and all of that, and then the people who were at risk, you know? So to us, advocacy is the bridge between those two things. So when they were like, okay, risk management coordinator, and I had to fight for like, can I also extend that to lead mental health advocate as well? And they're like, fine. So it worked out. It does. It's fine. And so some folks, risk management makes sense. To other audiences, mental health advocate makes sense. And I'm fine with both of it.
Well, I mean, but we can break that down and I want to get into your background, how you actually got here, but we can quick break that down. There is risk based on the mental health and acuity of workers on a job site, right?
Yep.
Anybody who's stressed, distracted by, you know, just we all got thoughts of family at home, but if you're having that thought of a family at home or, you know, a loved one and you're operating a piece of heavy equipment, that's risky.
Yep.
Right. So to me, I like both of them there because it's like both ends meet the middle, right?
It's a mouthful, but it really does make sense. You know, I remember sitting in an OSHA 510 class a year ago, and one of the training videos was like this old crusty training video from the 80s, and it had an iron worker in there. In the very beginning of it, he was bragging about how in the construction industry, you know, you don't. One of the things that's great about the construction industry is we don't talk about our stuff at home here. We don't bring that here. Like we're able to take a break, mentally from the things happening at home and get to work. And he was like bragging about it. And there was like music playing and stuff. And I was like, I watched this video and I was just like, there it is right there. That's it. Because that's impossible. It's a lie. You can't just leave that at the door or leave that at home. Everybody's bringing their stuff from home and bringing it to work. There's no way to let it go. So it is, if we can help people process what's happening at home and let give them safe spaces and point them in the right direction to get help for that stuff, it's a win-win for everybody and risk can be mitigated because of it.
That's a great connection between all of those things because, you know, it's not about not bringing it to work.
Right.
It's about creating an opportunity for you to sort of offload what you're experiencing. And then I think that iron worker poorly was onto something interesting that we can do in our business is if you can safely process that and then literally work with your hands, mm-hmm. whether you're operating equipment, whether you're operating a tool and get into a flow state where you're focused, you're attentive, you're here, you're in that moment, you're in the present moment.
That's right.
You can be very productive. And it can be a really good mental break, right? Yep. Because you've, not because of it, but because you've processed it and allowed yourself to hit that true flow state while you're working.
Yep. Yep. 100%.
So tell us a little bit. I'm already ahead of us. Sorry. Tell us a little bit about how you got here, Paul, because I think your story is kind of interesting. Around how you actually landed your way into this construction thing.
Yeah. So I'm not originally from the construction industry. I've only been in it for going on 6 years now. Before that, I actually was my career before construction was I was a middle school and high school youth pastor. So I was a pastor for one of the fastest growing churches in America down in Cincinnati, Ohio called Crossroads. And over there, I did a ton of preaching, teaching, volunteer leading and recruiting, training. And then also meeting up with families that were struggling. I'll never forget going to the hospital one time with a family whose 12-year-old son was in need of a liver transplant, like desperately, like he was almost kind of looked like he was on his deathbed. And they got it. They got the transplant in, but there were a couple of days that were shaky and I spent those days with them. And that was the kind of work that I did in ministry. It was a lot of just taking care of people. So that was my background. So that's like half of my background. The other half of my background is I'm a 2-time cancer survivor. So 2008 was the first time I was diagnosed with a specific kind of cancer that's pretty easy to beat without medically throwing out a bunch of details. The type of cancer I shared with somebody like Lance Armstrong. So that should probably tell you a little bit, about that. But it was the kind of cancer that when you're first diagnosed with it, the odds of beating it are really high. So when I was 20 years old in college and got this diagnosis, the doctors were like, we caught it early, 98% chance we're going to beat this thing and then you'll be good. So I go and do the chemo. I got home from school for the summer and just had to beat cancer. It was just ended up being a weird summer that year. So fast forward to the end of 2017, I was married and I had a 1-year-old. And we moved over to Indianapolis to burn out in the job that I was in, wanted to take a different job, smaller church, a little bit more manageable work. And I had started feeling kind of weird, like internally, like something was off. But this was 10 years after the fact that I had cancer. I didn't think it was cancer. There's no way it could be cancer. Went to the doctor. They're like, hey, it must be, some kind of a abdominal thing that's going on. But then I went in for my yearly checkup. And this was a month after we moved to Indianapolis, and the numbers that they look at in my blood to see if I have cancer or not, those came back and they had skyrocketed. So the cancer came back. Same cancer that I had before. It's like one cell lived and decided to turn back on and start growing again. So it was one of those like, okay, this was not part of our plan. So going into and fighting cancer a second time is different than the first time when your oncologist is like, hey, this wasn't supposed to come back. So when it comes back, the odds are different. The prognosis is different. And when you hear from an oncologist, we don't know. We don't know what the odds are. You don't want to hear that. You don't want to hear that, especially when you're going through chemo and you have a one-year-old asleep on your lap, because that's what it was. That's what the reality was. We went through the whole thing, chemo again, big surgery, and so I survived. Again, I still have the voicemail from my oncologist of him telling me, hey, your numbers are back to normal. So here I am, two-time cancer survivor, former pastor. I decided throughout the course of that thing, if my cancer did ever come back and did take me out, you don't go into ministry, you don't go become a pastor. Unless you go write books and you get on TV, you don't go into ministry to go get rich or to really set yourself up financially. That's not the point. You go into ministry because of mission. At least I hope you do. So for me, I never had like this plan to like set my family up financially. But after I went through cancer the second time, I realized I needed to do something different career-wise so that if this does come back, I can set my family up okay. So I had a friend who owned this construction company, the company that I'm at right now, Mid-City Electric, over in Columbus. And they were like, hey, you guys have been through hell for the last year and you're looking at career change. Why don't you come just work over here for a little bit, try construction out. If you don't like it, jump somewhere else. That's totally fine. Not sure exactly what you'll do with your background. That was kind of the fork in the road. It was like, what are you going to do as a pastor over in construction? So, but I said yes. And I was like, okay, let's just try it out. Good benefits. And, you know, I can work. If this is where I want to stay, I can, you know, find some path here. But had no idea what I was going to do with my background as a pastor and as a cancer survivor. And especially going through, and the cancer episode had me go through my own mental health journey. You know, like it was traumatic. The entire thing was traumatic. So I did. It launched me and bottomed me out a couple times in my mental health. So I have this background, land in construction in 2019, having no idea what this was going to turn into. Just answered phones, did admin work for a little bit. And then a couple years after I started, you know, I got promoted a couple times, did some good work, just hit the nail, you know, kept it going. And then in end of 2021, kind of after lockdown was done, we started a wellness committee. And you know, wellness committees in construction, you know, like it seems it's like a good idea that tends to, you know, fizzle out real fast. So I went into it was just like, I don't know, you know, and I wasn't expecting my coworker who started it, Monica Poirier, she's an incredible friend of mine. She's the one who started it. She does kind of health coaching. She does kind of the physical well side of well-being. She was like, hey, you're a former pastor. Why don't you come in and do the mental health stuff? And I was like, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I'm not like, I just want to make sure that you know I'm not that, you know? And she's just like, we don't care. You like people. No one else likes people, but you do. So why don't you just come on in and just join us for this? So we did. And about 3 months after that, we lost a foreman to suicide. And so it was one of those things where it was like, we had just kickballed the idea around mental health and what do we do with this? And then when we lost our foreman, it was really go time for like, okay, how can we take care of folks? It happened. We're in a reactive state now. We were being proactive and we really weren't getting any traction being proactive. Now we're in a reactive state. What can we do to go take care of the folks who knew him? So for me, I slipped right back into pastor mode. I went right back to, without throwing faith-based stuff at people and cramming Jesus down people's throats, I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to take care of people the way that I knew how. I was going back to what it was like being with that family who was on the verge of losing their son and just being with them, bring them food, talk to them, give them space to feel whatever it is they need to feel. So I went out on those job sites with the crews who knew this guy, and that's exactly what I did. And that's what started this whole thing. That's what gave me this idea, oh, you know, well-being in construction doesn't have to be complicated. It's just get out and take care of people and show them this isn't some like bullcrap thing we're trying to do to squeeze more work out of you. We're literally just trying to take care of you because everybody wins if we're doing okay. So then that just launched into a whole program. We started out as like, okay, job site visits, that's a thing. We should continue doing that. Make it a regular rhythm of getting out to the sites, bring food, do the toolbox talks, and just be available for people to talk and meet right there. Advocacy. not just having a therapist come out to the job site, nothing wrong with that, but have somebody out there who's just there and trained to care and listen. And then that turned into, what if we started doing trainings? Let's do suicide prevention trainings. Let's do active listening training. Let's start developing a peer support group. Let's say all the people going through these trainings and they're like, this is awesome. I've been a part of this industry for 20 years and we've never had anything like this. What can I do? I want to be a part of this. Put me to work. We started having more and more of these guys that were coming out, like the crusty dudes that everybody was saying, like, you'll never get those guys. But I have, because they needed to be shown what's possible. And then it just kept going and going and turning into this program. So that's where we're at now. It has really spilled out into the rest of the space in Central Ohio. What we started doing at Mid-City, other companies were looking at and being like, man, we want to do that too. So it's really given us a really cool position to go and show other companies what a program can look like. What is a living and breathing program that doesn't just post stuff for Mental Health Month and Suicide Prevention Month, but what's something that's just actively happening throughout the year? That's what we've developed. And I think that's what we have that's potent that other companies are looking at. So it's a wild story, man. It's been a wild ride. Like, it's been, if you had told me a couple years ago that I'd be doing this kind of stuff, like, I'd have been like, how in the hell do I get there? But that's it. That's how it's happened. So all this weird story of cancer background and being a former pastor and taking care of people, turns out it was a layup for exactly the kind of work that I'm doing now. I think the goal now is just like keep this program going over at Mid-City. And then my personal goal is to help out other companies and help them figure out programs too, and just keep developing that.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechCrew.com to learn more.
That's a wild ride. I got to tell you, so from a personal side, your story and mine are really similar. So
really?
My degree, religion and philosophy. I was going to go for a PhD.
Well, okay.
I knew I wasn't for the pulpit, right? Like, I wasn't there to preach. I was looking to more teach. But then I did a stint in the Peace Corps, which is a whole other side story.
Sure.
And like, nope, that's probably not going to work out.
Yeah.
So like you, I fell into construction. So I was 28. It was 2001. And I mean, you can imagine in those days, right? It was as basic as this. It was like, oh, hey, you want to get into construction? Yeah. Did you go to college? Yes, sir. Can you read? Yes, sir. Hey, cool. You want to be a safety guy? I was hired by a guy. Awesome.
Yes.
Human. Jim Wilkerson hired me. I was hired. And imagine this in construction. At the time, he had 3 contracts for a full 40-hour safety person.
Wow.
3.
Wow.
I was still shocked. I'm like, how did you get to 2 without having, you know, the goods, right? So I show up to these 3 jobs for 18 months, just getting worn out.
Yep.
Daily. And they all kind of figured out pretty quick of like, you're a greenhorn. You have no clue what you're doing.
Oh, boy. Gosh. God bless the greenhorns, man. Oh,
yep.
Lord. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so same thing. It's like, how are you going to, you're a safety guy. You have a degree of religion. What?
Right.
Well, yeah, I talk a lot. I'm good at talking. More importantly, I'm good at listening.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So a lot of interesting skills of how you came in. I did it kind of very similar, very different back in the day. So, man, thank you for the work you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Likewise, Cal always talks about building his army of helpers. Like, that's like his, he talks about that all the time. And I am a proud member of that army of helpers, you know. And my goal is to go and expand that and get more people seeing themselves as an advocate. I think that's the thing that is most potent about this entire movement, is that you can get out there and show people you can be a safety guy and you can be an advocate. You can be a project manager and you can be an advocate. You can be a journeyman and you can be an advocate. Like, it's empowering people to take that little kernel of care that they have for people and turn it into a little piece of identity. That's the thing that we get to do. And that's what I'm so excited about.
You know, that one nugget right there, Jeff, I think is very important to share in the industry, because over the past year, the more I've been working into the mental side of things, into the mental space, I cannot tell you how many construction safety professionals came to me and they're saying, hey, this whole mental health thing, I don't know what to do. I went to college or school or fill in the blank. Like, I understand OSHA and compliance and rules and regulation. I don't know what to do with the mind, but the company has voluntold them, hey, this mental health thing, you know, especially like you were saying, after the pandemic, it was, we got to do mental health. We got to do suicide prevention. Hey, you safety people, you're out there. You're in the field all the time. You talk to people. That's on you. And they're looking back at HR like, well, what?
Yeah.
They've been told to be an advocate. And granted, there's a lot that have picked up the mantle and do amazing, awesome things.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to several that are, they're struggling with it and they want to do good, but they don't know what.
Right.
I'll tell y'all, the vast majority are hiding in the corner like, I got to go out and do what? Because they don't know matters of the mind. It's not as easy as OSHA say, well, okay, where does fall protection start? And you could rattle off all the triggers of, well, 6 foot generally or a scaffold or whatever. Here it's like, hey, somebody comes up, and Jeff, I'm going to pull a couple out, right? Here's a couple of shots across the bow. Somebody tells you they want to eat a bullet in this industry. What do you do?
Yeah.
I had a guy back in the day, one of the safety coordinators that worked for me. His wife beat him. He'd get out of the car. I could just tell by his walk. I knew what had happened the night before.
Wow.
2004, 2005. What do you do when one of your employees, you know, is physically getting beaten that really didn't acknowledge it, but then would cry his guts out to you and beg you not to tell anybody?
Wow.
These are the things that safety pros get put into as the quote advocate. But how are you helping to work with your team to kind of train people up when you have these incredibly uncomfortable things pop up?
Yeah.
What's your playbook look like?
Yeah, just empower people, man. I think that's where we call it the advocates team. That's our peer support team. And it was born out of doing these suicide prevention trainings, whether that's mental health first aid or vital cog or QPR or any of these other really great trainings. And these folks just organically coming up and saying, I want to be involved in this. I want to dive into this deeper. So these are the folks who've self-selected. It's not that they've been like voluntold, because I agree, there are a lot of folks who are voluntold to do this. And they're like, I don't have the tools. Like, I don't have what I need in order to be able to handle these conversations or take care of people. So what we wanted to do was, okay, if we had a peer support group, if we had an advocates team, what does that look like? We meet bi-monthly, we eat together, and we go over a deeper training, whatever it is. We've done active listening training together. We've gone over the opioid crisis and talked to Narcan. You know, we have, Cal has jumped in on those meetings with us before and done virtual training with us. These are the folks that are getting that extra level of support. I see them as my eyes and ears out on the job sites. I can't be at every job site, but I know there's an advocate at pretty much every job site we have. And I've got somebody who's I'm personally connected to at all these places. So if they feel like they are uncomfortable having a conversation with somebody like, hey, this might be a little bit beyond me, then they'll pull me in. So we have this network of support that's happened, and all of it's based on what I learned in ministry. Who are your volunteers? Who are your top volunteers? Who are your people who could do your job or who could do parts of your job, be the arms and legs of this movement on the job sites? That's what we did. And so that's what it looks like for us. I think it's replicable. I think the more you get this topic out there, the more people are like, I've been wanting to do this for a long time. I just needed to be shown how, or I needed to be given an opportunity. There are a lot of folks. I hear that all the time.
You're spot on there, man. Some of the talks that I've been doing this year, I'll usually have at least one person come up and tell me their very disturbing story and thank me for talking about it and offering tricks and tactics. This week, I had three each day that came up to say, you know, thanks for acknowledging that you had anxiety in this industry. And this was my first panic attack, what it looks like and how I'm still dealing with it. But they also, I'll say this, they kind of look around. They make sure there's nobody in earshot or really watching when they come up and tell me that.
Yeah, it's so new. This idea of being vulnerable and sharing, that the first time they do it, it is. To us, you know, who are advocates, we are primed for these conversations. We have these conversations on a pretty regular basis. For these guys, it's a thing that is in their minds for a long time as the first time they may share their story. And that's why every single time someone comes up, I want to give them that space and attention, because as normal as it is to me, for them, this could be a life-changing moment.
Back in 2020, I heard about a new software platform called Join. Within minutes of seeing Join, I knew it had the power to revolutionize collaborative project delivery. In fact, I was so sold on Join that I joined the team as its industry evangelist. Many trade shows and podcasts later, Join is now used by 50% of the ENR top 30. Why? Pre-con and ops leaders at DPR, Bolt, McCarthy, Barton Mallow, Clark, and others say that they like Join because it does two big things: collaborative, trackable decision-making, and awesomely simple visuals. Want to learn more about the power of Join? Go to www.join.build/demo to learn about how better gets built. Yeah, it's a powerful thing to think through. And what I love about the story right now too is that what you guys have done internally, you've built something, and your culture supports it. And just that person reaching out to you saying, "Hey, come try this as a career. If it doesn't work out," you can already see like the seeds of the culture of maybe we just try things a little bit.
Let's try it.
And you know, they're like, "Well, if it grows in, if the seed grows, great. If it doesn't, well, you know, we'll see." Yep. But you guys have turned around as part of your peer groups, and you're trying to help take what you've sort of organically built, got from people like Cal, and democratize it more. You're not trying to hold on to it. So talk a little bit about what you guys are doing there.
We've been part of our local builders exchange since we first started as a company back in 1960. We've been a part of this for a long time. And like most builders exchanges, you know, we used it for the same purpose that a lot of people use them, which is for shared trainings, you know, networking, you know, awards, that stuff. Like that's the kind of, you know, purpose for the builders exchange. They also have a safety council that they work alongside with the, you know, BWC. And, you know, we show up to those once a month breakfast safety councils, and they have somebody come up and speak, and, you know, but we've never used the builders exchange or leveraged them beyond that, you know? So they had me come out and speak for their safety council back at the end of 2022. And I did a 45-minute talk on suicide prevention. I told my story, and the response from this thing, like just people lined up wanting to talk and like share their story. And that was the first time I put myself out there, like, and really represented what we built at Mid-City and put it out on a platform. And afterwards I was just like, man, if that was the response that we got from just that opportunity, we need to do more with this. Like the BX, the Builders Exchange, man, we need to befriend them. We need to like really leverage our membership with them as a way of connecting what we've built here at Mid-City to 600 other companies. Like really, it's Central Ohio Builders Exchange is really well represented by a lot of companies. So I just got to know their safety education director, who was over the safety council, but also did all of their curriculum for what they offer for safety. And his name's Ashton Chapman. He and I became and are very close friends now. And we started spitballing this idea. What if we started doing something like every time you put well-being out there, people eat it up. Like obviously there's a demand here. So why don't we go and offer it? Why don't we meet the demand and go and start something that's just focused on construction and well-being? Not let it just be the talk for Mental Health Month or the talk for Suicide Prevention Month, but to actually make this a year, throughout the year, this is something we talk about. This is something we focus on. Our statistics demand that we do something like this. We need to do something. So we just kind of threw this idea out there to the leadership of the Builders Exchange. We'd like to start a group that's just focused on creating a platform for construction leadership and the well-being professionals and experts. So we did some think tanking on it. We came up with a name. We call it Blueprints for Well-Being. And we started off with the idea of let's meet four times a year, advertise it to members of the Builders Exchange. It's free for BX members. It's a small fee for people outside of the BX. But really, we go and we develop content every quarter. The first quarter was just on suicide and overdose. And we bring in local providers to come speak and present in front of construction leadership. So for that first one in January, we had Alcohol, Drug, and Mental Health Board of Franklin County, which is the county we're in, Adam H. They are one of the main local providers and local well-being professionals, basically. And we had them come in and present. Their vice president came in. And out of that meeting, we had close to 60 companies come in and represent. 11 of those companies then had her come in and present at their company for their leadership. And it was a case in point. It was a proof of concept for us. We wanted to create a platform, an almost TED Talk style platform for local well-being providers to sit in front of construction industry leadership to hear from the people who can impact our statistics and what's happening with suicide and overdose and get them connected and give them a chance to mingle. And that was out of the gate. We saw this thing can work. So that was January. Then we did a whole topic on EAP utilization. We had Cal come out and speak on the opioid crisis, because that's a big platform for him right now, is talking about the opioid crisis. So he came in and spoke. We had over 80 folks there for that one. And Cal, out of his presentation, pointed to local providers who could provide Narcan for job sites. We had one of them bring 300 doses of Narcan to this event, and all of the companies there claimed all 300 doses of Narcan to go back to their job sites. And even better than that, they now know who they can get free Narcan from if they run out. So to us, this was proof of concept this year that this can be huge. So Blueprints for Wellbeing currently still sits under the Builders Exchange. It's what's been kind of growing and developing culture here in Central Ohio. But I think it has the potential of being in a program that can get out there and go further. I think it works. You put construction industry leadership who cares and wants to do well by people, and the well-being experts who may or may not have that inward path to get over to construction, you're creating that platform for them to mingle and get to know each other. That's where we're at right now, trying to develop that, grow that out, and see where it goes.
It's a fascinating, but also if you boil it down, it's supply and demand. It's an unfortunate situation that we have, but if we ignore it, then we're not doing anything to improve it.
Right.
But we have a demand for Narcan, right? I don't know that there's very many people that are like, oh, I don't think having that around is a good idea. But I also don't know that they're like, oh, my local Narcan provider is, and we don't have all the time in the world. And what do we focus on? We focus on the thing that we're going to get yelled at the most for.
Right.
To connect that, and it would be interesting to catch the statistics on how much of that is making it to the job site now. And again, connecting local providers. This is the thing, is we talk so much, even on this show, we're at a high level, right? We're not at the ground level. It's not boots on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've built is a boots on the ground solution. And it might be supply and demand, but you can go home feeling really good about it. And that's the cool part about it, is that you could chalk up, you may have made the connection that makes the connection to help somebody be here tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The trickle down effect of these relationships, I think I would be interested in a few years. What was the, not financial ROI, but what is the impact? What is the statistical impact of these relationships? I can't wait to see that. Right now, I'm hearing from all these companies that are just like, thank you for providing this, because now I have a connection to, now we as a company have a connection to an organization like Adam H., which is our local, one of our big local mental health providers. They now have a relationship. They now have that connection. And as much as they could have been left to go onto Google and just go, find people who do this, that's fine. But like you said, in our industry, you don't have that. You need to be able to provide that platform, that thing that gets people connected and bought in to this idea that there are people who can impact these statistics and do something about this. We just got to get to know each other.
Well, and we got to be connected because, you know, that's Cal's big thing about EAP, right? Lots and lots and lots of companies have EAP systems, which is the Employee Assistance Program, right? This is where employees are supposed to be able to go to get mental health resources, other types of resources to help them. But most of those people have never walked through the steps. So right. What I love what Cal does, and he's like, listen, if you have an EAP program and you've never used it, your job tomorrow is to try it.
Go give it a shot. Yep.
Go give it a shot.
Yep. And that's part of even to back up what you're saying there, you know, when I go out and I talk about EAP, you know, I tell my story about the second time I beat cancer, but I bottomed out in my mental health. And I used our company EAP and found my therapist through it. Met with him for a year, got me back up on my feet. Helped me out as a dad and as a husband and as a worker. It really got me back to a good place. So when I go out and I talk about our EAP out on job sites, they're seeing another burly bearded dude saying, this stuff's legit. It's for real. It's not here to pull your leg. It's not here to check a box. It's not here to just follow policy or anything. It's here to benefit you and your family. And I think they need that. They need that kind of permission and that kind of example to see, oh, this isn't bullcrap. Because so many people, they don't trust this stuff. And I get it. But they need to have that bridge of advocacy, that thing that shows them, oh, this is legit. This is for real. They may not trust a resource first, but they might trust a person. So if you can be that person that they'll go out and trust, that can get them connected over to those resources.
You're doing amazing work of getting out there and breaking down a big wall. Because Jeff, let's think about it from the safety side of the table. Our industry, we love an acronym. When you talk about EAP, a lot of times you're
emergency
doing that
action
safety
plan.
Meeting. Exactly. They're like, wait, what about what? I know where the muster point is. Like, no. We're not talking about if the building's on fire. We're talking about if your mind is on fire.
Yeah, right.
Or something else, right? And getting out there and being vulnerable to actually say, I had these issues. Here's what's going on. Versus the status quo of so many decades and generations of how, unfortunately, a lot of us have been trained and kind of coded in our brains of what is and isn't acceptable. Man, thank you for breaking down those walls and trying to open it up.
Vulnerability pulls vulnerability out of the woodwork. That's what we've been seeing. You got to model it. You got to show it. And if you do, these guys that have never been vulnerable before will go up and tell their story. It's incredible. And for all the people that are just like, can't be done. Yeah, it can. Yeah. Just got to be approached differently.
That's a hard thing for a lot of management mindset to get behind, though. So here's another shot, right? When you haven't struggled and been touched by struggle, because I've had a few executives tell me this, a few safety pros are saying, I hear you, but I can't understand. I've never dealt with these things. When they don't have that scar at all, it's really hard. You know, I kind of challenge people sometimes in talks of like, hey, there are unicorns on this planet that don't have any mental or physical issues. You've never struggled. You never dealt with strife. And guess what? We were taught as kids, that's the norm. It's not. That's why I call them unicorns. There's not many of us like that. Or, you know, maybe you haven't seen the movie The Matrix, right? You don't know which white rabbit you're following.
Right.
In this industry. But man, the work you're doing, I think, helps open those eyes, especially at the executive level of, well, what do you mean? We have an EAP. Everything's fine. No. Have you really asked the right people at the right level?
Yeah.
Have you gone to the field or really asked somebody holding the tool? You okay?
Yeah. And I do feel blessed. Like, I think Mid-City leadership, not to toot our horn, but man, they have been so empowering and they have given me so much freedom and grace to go build this. And I mean, we're also coming from a place of, like I said earlier, we were in a reactive place. You know, I think part of the mission is to help more and more companies confidently step into a proactive place, which is more vulnerable. It's a little bit of a scarier thing because you're not like, hey, this is a thing we should all care about. And you don't have that thing that happened in your company to point at to say, hey, this is for real. You know, you have to be able to just say, here are the statistics. This is what's happening. We want to get ahead of that statistic impacting our company directly. So being in a proactive place is actually a great place to be as a company, even if it's more vulnerable. For us, we were in a reactive place. So our company leadership was just like, no, what do we need to do? Like, we're here. What can we do to take care of our people? But also, what can we do to make sure and try to make sure that this doesn't happen again?
That's a good point.
Yeah, I want to see you get to kind of giving some folks some advice on that. But the other thing I will challenge for anybody listening is, if you think you got a whole office full of, or company full of unicorns, you don't. And if you think you're just being, you're going to be reactive, go out and ask, because there's not a lot of companies that have been around this long in construction, statistically speaking, that can't say, hey, yeah, I have experienced this. Like, you know, this person used to be part of our crew. Notice they're not part of our crew anymore. They're not here. We're not talking about it. You know, maybe it didn't happen the day they were here on the job, but, you know, maybe they left the job and you know what happened down the road. So, statistically speaking, there's really not a company out there that's not experiencing this in some way, shape, or form. So to that point, like, Mid-City Electric had a culture. It had, an incident, right? Like, that's the spark. It's an unfortunate spark, but it is a spark, and you've taken it and gone with it. For those that don't think they have that right now, but don't want it, right? They want to get ahead. What are some steps? What can they do, Paul? What would you suggest they do to get started? Because that's usually the hardest part, right? Is they hear this and then they go, oh, well, that was really cool, but it's like, so give me a tool. It's like tech. It's like all of that. It's like, I know I should. How do I take the first step?
I always will go back to, I don't know if you guys have ever listened to Simon Sinek. He's my boy. I love him. Oh my gosh. I want to meet him someday so bad. He did that Start With Why video, that TED Talk from 10, 15 years ago. And it set a fire to me under this idea of, you got to start with why. And not just start with why about, like, man, here are statistics. Get story behind it. I'll never forget sitting in front of our company leadership and giving them the rundown on why we built our program. Like, I hadn't done that yet. They gave me the thumbs up, the, like, go build it. You're Mr. Pastor Man. Go build it. But I hadn't given them the full rundown of the state of statistics in the industry and all of that for probably 6 to 9 months after I got started. And then I went in there and I presented to them and I showed them, here are our statistics. This is just what's happening. And again, we're in a reactive place, but I would say, even if we weren't in a reactive place, if you can cater to the idea of you're taking care of your people, which is going to help you with business and with retention, this is a win-win for everybody. This is saving lives. And that's the core mission of this entire thing. But there are so many different byproducts. There's return on investment with this thing. There's employee retention. There's building trust and respect. It's healthier teams. I can tell you right now, company leadership, we didn't have to be in a reactive place. But if you can approach it from that angle about why this is really, like, this is just good business to do this as well. They're very receptive to that. We're lucky at Mid-City that our leadership just also, they do care about people. That's just in their DNA. It's just who they are. But I would say that for the companies that are like, we want to get started with this, we just got to get buy-in from leadership. Show them why this is the best business decision for you to make. This is for a pretty low investment, you can get a lot of return on it by doing this kind of thing. If you can approach leadership that way, with your core mission being, we're just doing the right thing and we're saving lives, but let them know those byproducts, I think that's a good place to get to.
I absolutely love that, because I am a huge Simon Sinek fan. You know, start with why for sure.
Good dude.
You know, the why is, you know, we want to save lives. We want to be there for people. We want them to live better lives, more fulfilled. You know, you jumped into another of my favorite with Brené Brown on vulnerability. And vulnerability is possibly the most important leadership trait on the planet. And if you can start with the right why, you can lead with vulnerability.
And you
the cool part is, you can turn around to the organization and say, listen, we can prove now with statistics that this creates a safer job site, which is better for the company. it actually, if you can, and I talked about this early on, if you can create high performing teams through vulnerability and trust and support, they can actually be far more productive via flow state, but also via their safety in communicating with one another when there is a problem, right? Like, we're talking about really deep problems. Those are, I mean, those are big, and that's our important why. It's our foundational why. But if we can talk about the big stuff, then the little stuff becomes like nothing. And those are big problems on job sites when we don't communicate with one another because we're in a state of not trusting one another and not having that space for each other and not teaming well.
Mm-hmm.
So This creates a foundation for so much great business and so much better of an environment too, because we've said this for how long, Rob, and you can attest to this. Like, we leave every job exhausted with our heads down, dragging our butts out. Why not walk off the job site high-fiving and having a great time and saying, can't wait to do that again?
Feeling like you're part of a community. You know, you think about, I don't remember which one it was, whether it was monster.com or one of those, you know, jobs websites. But they did a study a little while back showing, like, you know, with Gen Z, like, this is just what they expect. This is what they're growing up with. This is part of their community already. So for us as an industry, for all of the folks who are freaking out about, you know, growing the workforce so that we can get the work done, that's definitely a reality here in Central Ohio with Intel being here and all sorts of jobs. So we have multi-mega projects happening here in Columbus. You know, you want to lower that threshold to reach the next generation, just do this stuff. Like, don't get out of the way of feeling like, oh, the stigma and this is weird and whatever. Like, no. Get comfortable talking about this thing because you have one of the best retention and employee attraction tools right there as a byproduct of just saving lives. So it's just, to me, it's so funny to get out on the internet and look at all these articles about, like, the concerns about the workforce and how are we going to get the people? How are we going to get the people? No, just let people know that you want to build an industry that genuinely cares for the workers, genuinely, not checking a box, but genuinely caring for workers. And they'll want to actually be a part of it.
Well, Rob, I don't know that there's any other way to do that. We might get in trouble with Nike, but I'm going to say it anyway. Paul Lawson says, just do it.
Just do it. Just do it.
It's right.
Yep.
It makes sense, and it makes sense for people. It makes sense for business. It makes sense for construction. Man, I can't thank you enough. I knew when we had that call that this was an episode we needed to do. And so I really appreciate you and Mid-City Electric for allowing you to come and sit down with us and have a little pause for the cause episode, Paul. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's so nice to talk to both of you guys.
You too. And let people know where they can go learn more about kind of what you're doing with the Building Exchange, what you're doing at Mid-City Electric.
Yeah. So we're going to be Blueprints for Wellbeing. We're working on getting a website out. Again, it's been an initiative that has really grown organically under our local Builders Exchange. So we don't really have a landing page yet. So if you want to reach out to me and talk to me about it, you can reach out to me at plawson@midcityelectric.com. Just email me, get connected to me, friend me over on LinkedIn. I'd love to just get connected with you, talk to you, and anything that I can do to help spur this conversation on and keep it going. This is what I want to do.
I'm sure you're going to get a lot of connects from this one. We appreciate it. Rob, thanks, man. I knew this would be a good one, buddy.
Jeff, thanks for the opportunity to meet Paul and talk. Paul, what I'm hearing from you is amazing work. Thank you for what you're doing.
Absolutely.
I think what you're working towards is trying to shift an industry away. You know, no disrespect. You're trying to shift people away from the grind to what Jeff's talking about, that flow state. And that's a very big mental model for a lot of leaders to really understand, of shifting away from looking at employees the way they kind of have been at sometimes and do it very different way. So thank you for the work that you're doing. And man, I'll be following your work closely, man.
Awesome. Well. Great. Fantastic. Thanks, guys.
And thank you for tuning in today for our Pause for the Cause interview with Paul Lawson. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is The Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.